Good afternoon. This is Bob Kruger with Thought for Food for February of 2023. This program is heard on the third Wednesday of the month at 4 p.m. and repeated on the third Saturday of the month at 3 p.m. It's intended for a blind and print-impaired audience, but hopefully it'll be interesting to everyone. Days to remember this month begin on National Freedom Day on the 1st, Groundhog Day on the 2nd, and the Boy Scouts of America's birthday is the 8th. Go back to 1910. President Lincoln's birthday is the 12th, and Valentine's Day is the 14th. Shrove Tuesday is the 21st. Ash Wednesday is the 22nd. President Washington's birthday is the 22nd. It will be observed as President's Day on the 20th. As we are now in the second month of 2023, it may be time to think of how the rest of the year will turn out. When you think about the future, do you expect good things or bad things to happen? If you weigh in on the good side, you're an optimist, and that has positive implications for your health in later life. Multiple studies show the strong association between higher levels of optimism and reduced risk of conditions such as heart disease, stroke, and cognitive impairment. Several studies have also linked optimism with longer life. One of the latest, published this year, comes from researchers at Harvard University School of Public Health in collaboration with colleagues at other universities. It found that older women who scored highest on measures of optimism lived 4.4 years longer on average than those with the lower scores. Results hold true across race and ethnicities. Why would optimism make such a difference? Experts have various explanations. People who are optimistic cope better with the challenges of daily life and are less likely to experience stress than people with less positive attitudes. They're more likely to eat well and exercise and often have stronger networks of family and friends who can provide assistance if needed. Also, people who are optimistic tend to engage more effectively in problem-solving strategies and to be better at regulating their emotions. Of course, a feedback loop is in play here. People may be more likely to experience optimism if they enjoy good health and a good quality of life. But optimism isn't confined to those who are doing well. Studies suggest that it's a genetically inheritable trait and can be cultivated through concerted interventions. What does optimism look like in practice? For answers, Judith Graham of the Kaiser Health News talked to some older adults who identify as optimists, but who don't take this characteristic for granted. Instead, it's a choice they make every day. One of these folks was Patricia Reeves, age 73, of Oklahoma City. "I've had a fairly good life, but I've had my share of traumas like everyone else," she said. Mrs. Reeves, a widow of 7 years who lives alone, says, "I think it's my faith and my optimism that's pulled me through." A longtime teacher and school principal, she retired to take care of her parents and her second husband, a Baptist minister, before they died. During the COVID-19 pandemic, she said, "I've been developing my spirituality." When asked what optimism meant to her, Mrs. Reeves said, "You can see the good in every situation or you can see the negative. When something isn't going the way I wish, I prefer to ask myself, what am I learning from this? What part did I play in this? And am I repeating the patterns of behavior? How can I change?" As for the challenges that come from aging, the loss of friends and family, health issues, she spoke of optimism as a can-do attitude that keeps going. You don't spend your time concentrating on your health or thinking of your aches and pains. You take them as a fact, then you let them go. Or if you've got a problem you can solve, you figure out how to solve it and you move on to tomorrow, Mrs. Reeves said. There's always something to be grateful for, and you can focus on that. I'd like to have a conversation with this lady. Another person they interviewed was Grace Harvey, 100 years old, of Lawton, Georgia. "I look for the best to happen under any circumstances," she said. She's a retired teacher and devout Baptist. "You can work through any situation with the help of God." Her parents, a farmer and teacher in Georgia, barely made enough to get by. even though you might classify me as poor, I don't think of myself as poor, she said. I thought of myself as blessed in parents doing the best they could. Today, Miss Harvey lives in a mobile home and teaches Sunday school. She never married or had any children, but is surrounded by having family members and former students at her birthday party last October. Not having my own family, I was able to touch the lives of many others, she said. I feel grateful for God letting me live this long, and I still want to be around to help someone. Oh, if we could feel that toward others as she does. With access to sources including cookbooks and blogs, TikTok and TVs, we live amid a virtual smorgasbord of food inspiration. But you can't always be certain that amateurs on the internet or even experienced chefs are covering their food safety bases. Ill-conceived shortcuts and out-of-date practices can lead to real illnesses, especially if they go, well, viral. People have been taught a certain way, or they just don't aware of certain safety risks. Then they start to post on social media, which goes to many other people, said Meredith Carruthers, United States Department of Agriculture food safety expert. She says she's seen more bad advice popping up online, especially as short-form platforms leave little room for safe handling tips. Studies have found that cookbooks and television shows often fall short on food safety, too. Millions of people suffer foodborne illnesses annually in the United States. Ms. Carruthers said it's often difficult to connect each case to a precise cause. The best prevention is to follow practices proven to keep disease-causing microbes at bay. For instance, cooking chicken to an internal temperature of 165 degrees Fahrenheit, which you can confirm by sticking a food thermometer into the thickest part, kills illness-causing germs such as salmonella. Rinsing raw chicken, on the other hand, can spread them. There's nothing you can do to remove harmful bacteria, said Ben Chapman, who directs a food safety research program at North Carolina State University. You're only increasing the risk by depositing it in your sink or around your sink. Food safety experts have long discouraged chicken rinsing, but a 2016 U.S. Food and Drug Administration survey found that 67% of the consumers still wash chicken before cooking. Rinsing any raw meat or seafood will also spread bacteria. The only way to know whether something is cooked safe to a safe doneness is to use a thermometer, Mr. Chapman says, noting that clear juices, browning, and texture aren't sufficient indicators. If anyone is telling you in a recipe there's some other proxy for doneness, it's not based on science. For example, to kill pathogens such as E. coli, hamburger patties need to reach an internal temperature of 160 degrees, but a burger can lose its pink color below that temperature. Mr. Chapman noted that burgers are more risky than a steak if undercooked. I can cook a steak to a fairly rare level and know it's reducing contamination. I'm getting the outside really, really hot, and I don't expect there to be any pathogens inside. Conversely, he said, in a ground beef patty, I'm mixing it up, and the outside now becomes the inside. So pathogens may be killed if the patty is left rare. Unfortunately for me, I like a rare hamburger. Maybe I've just been lucky so far. Cain Realty recently announced the second restaurant slated for its main district expansion in Raleigh's North Hills. Lamani Grill, an upscale Mediterranean seafood restaurant centered around traditional Greek specialties, first opened in Long Island in 2008 and received high praise from the New York Times. This will be Lalami Grill's first location in Raleigh, but its second in North Carolina. Lalami has restaurants in Charlotte, Manhattan, Long Island, and Chestnut Hills, Massachusetts. The expansion project in the space formerly occupied by J.C. Penney is currently under construction and is slated to open in the spring of 2024. We're excited to bring this first Lalami Grill in Raleigh to North Hills, Stacy Buescher, Managing Director of Operations for Cain Realty. Lalami is an incredible restaurant out of New York, offering top-notch service and phenomenal food made from the freshest ingredients. Village Tavern, an American restaurant with four locations in North Carolina, announced a future North Hills location last July. Whatever your wellness goals for this year are, one powerful change could go a long way toward your success. Eat more vegetables. The proven benefits of doing so read like an informational. Improve immunity, boost gut health, keep blood pressure in check, lower risk of heart disease, support a healthy weight. But wait, there's more in this case, however. The too good to be true is actually true. We know why to a degree. Vegetables brim with health protective compounds, including essential vitamins and minerals, fiber, and a broad spectrum of antioxidants, which destroy damaging free radicals in the body. Scientists have isolated and studied many of these plant compounds, but they only have scratched the surface. One thing they have discovered is that taking the compounds in pill form doesn't have the same benefit. It's the package deal of the vegetable that protects us. As David Katz, a specialist in preventive medicine and lifestyle medicine, so cleverly puts it, the active ingredient in broccoli is broccoli. Yet nearly 90% of Americans fall short of the recommended vegetable intake, 2 to 3 cups a day for women and 3 to 4 cups a day for men. And about 62% of the vegetables we do eat comes from the same 5 sources, 3 of which are white potato-based, with one of the most common being French fries. According to a study published in the Journal of the Academic Nutrition and Dietetics in 2022, not that there's anything wrong with potatoes. They're nutritious and delicious. We just need to branch out and fry less often. Vegetables have a unique nutrient and antioxidant profile, so more variety is key to a broader spectrum of health protective benefits. Color is a helpful cue. Since different antioxidants impart different hues to food, using the full spectrum of color of produce, including white, not only works in our favor nutritionally, it also makes our meals so much more alluring. On top of the nutrients you get from eating more vegetables is a beneficial displacement factor. Opt for, say, mushrooms and peppers on your peaches instead of your usual pepperoni, or dip sliced cucumbers rather than pita chips in your hummus. And you not only get more nutrition, you also by default typically reduce calories, sodium, refined grains, and processed meats. It's not an all or nothing proposition. Even if you get mushrooms, peppers, and pepperoni on your pizza, you're still better off. Yes, I know mushrooms are not vegetables, botanically speaking. Neither are tomatoes, cucumbers, or zucchini, for that matter. But from a nutritional and culinary point of view, they all count as vegetables. Whether you're a beginner who is ready to venture beyond the occasional baby carrot or a salad, here are some simple ways to eat more plants. There's no need to overhaul your life to incorporate more vegetables. Simply toss them into whatever you're cooking. Cooking pasta with a tomato sauce, add a handful of pre-washed agarra or baby spinach to the warm sauce to greatly wilt it, or pile of greens on top of the finished plate in a burst of fresh color and flavor. Fresh chopped baby spinach is also nice to add to chicken noodle soup, ramen, or minestrone. Frozen green peas, cauliflower, broccoli are ideal add-ons to mac and cheese. Add a handful to the cheese sauce to warm through before you stir in the pasta. Frozen vegetables are as nutritious as fresh vegetables. They're often more economical, easier to use, often already chopped, are easy to keep on hand, so take advantage of them. And when you make a sandwich, venture beyond the usual lettuce and tomato. Pile on thinly sliced radishes or cucumber, grated carrots or sprouts. A handful of spinach or kale in your morning smoothie is basically undetectable, but adds nutrient-rich, dark green leafy greens. Promise yourself to try to eat more vegetables. This story comes from Barbara Intermill, a writer for the Tribune News Service. She begins, "We buy eggs from a chicken farmer in our area. He leaves them at our son-in-law's veterinary clinic, and we pick them up when we come in with dogs, horses, or cows. Last week, we got news that we would have to pay more. No argument there. We're thankful he has a healthy flock. Meanwhile, millions of chickens have been destroyed in the United States and other parts of the world due to avian influenza or bird fever. According to the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, this fast-spreading virus can wipe out an entire flock in a couple of days. Along with a staggering blow to the farmer comes a nutritional cost as well. Egg protein is one of the most complete and easily digested proteins on the planet, and eggs provide an array of essential vitamins and minerals, including vitamin D, a scarce nutrient in many foods. They're also a good source of chlorine, a nutrient especially important during pregnancy to support the unborn baby's brain development. Eggs have even survived the great debate over cholesterol and heart disease. Once vilified for their high cholesterol content, in 2013, a growing body of evidence finally led the American Heart Association and the American College of Cardiology to reverse their previous idea that egg consumption led to heart disease. In fact, eggs are now considered a nutrient-dense protein, according to the 2020-2025 Dietary Guideline for Americans. So until our beloved egg supply is replenished, what's for breakfast that supplies adequate protein is a big question. Barbara goes on. Since I cook for breakfast, she offers some suggestions. A protein-packed breakfast taco. Heat corn tortillas in the microwave and stuff with chopped sweet potatoes, quinoa, and kale salad mix, chopped red peppers. A sunrise pizza. Top a frozen whole grain waffle with honey-flavored yogurt, your protein source, sliced bananas, and canned mandarin oranges drained. Drizzle with a bit of honey and cinnamon. Peanut butter burritos. Spread peanut butter on whole grain tortillas topped with sliced pineapple, banana, kiwi, strawberries, or any combinations of fruit you like. I believe I'd enjoy one of these breakfasts without eggs. The Food and Drug Administration recently announced new plans for nutrition labels that can go on the front of food packages to indicate they are healthy. Under this proposal, manufacturers can label their products healthy if their products contain a meaningful amount of food from at least one of the food groups or subgroups, such as fruit, vegetable, or dairy, recommended by the dietary guidelines. They must also adhere to specific limits for certain nutrients, such as saturated fat, sodium, and added sugars. For example, a cereal would need to contain 3/4 ounce of whole grains and no more than 1 gram of saturated fat, 230 milligrams of sodium, and 2.5 grams of added sugar per serving for a manufacturer to use the word healthy on the label. The labels are aimed at helping consumers more easily navigate nutritional labels and make better choices at the grocery store. The proposed rule would align the definition of the healthy claim with current nutrition scientists, the updated nutrition facts label, and current dietary guidelines for America, the FDA said. The agency is also developing a symbol that companies can voluntarily use to label food products that set federal guidelines for the term healthy. Once finalized, the Food and Drug Administration's new system will quickly and easily communicate nutrition information through methods such as star ratings or traffic light symbols to promote equitable access to nutritional information and healthier choices. The system can also prompt industry to reformulate their products to meet the updated definition. The stakes are high. 6 in 10 Americans have chronic health lifestyle-related diseases, often coming from obesity and poor diet, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. The CDC says these diseases are the leading cause of death and disability and a leading driver in the nation's $4.1 trillion annual health care costs. Studies show that obesity, especially among children, rose significantly during the pandemic, with the greatest change among children ages 5 to 11, who gained an average of more than 5 pounds. Before the pandemic, about 36% of the 5 to 11-year-olds were considered overweight or obese. During the pandemic, that increased to 45.7%. Groups such as the Center for Science and the Public Interest have long petitioned the Food and Drug Administration to adopt mandatory, standardized, and evidence-based front-of-the-package labeling. Front-of-the-package labeling, they say, will reach more consumers than the nutrition facts on the back of the packages, having them quickly choose more beneficial foods and spurring companies to reformulate products in a more healthful direction. According to nutrition experts, Americans generally consume too much sodium, added sugars, and saturated fat in their packaged food. So to be able to quickly identify foods that are high or low in these nutrients would be a significant public health benefit. New language labeling is sure to be controversial among food manufacturers that have sought to capitalize on America's interest in more healthful food. The FDA's healthy definition can succeed only if it's clear and consistent for manufacturers and understood by consumers. Roberta Wagner, a spokeswoman for the industry organization Consumer Brands Association, said. But what constitutes healthy food is a thorny topic among nutrition experts. With foods high in what many nutrition experts call good fats, such as those that contain almonds or avocados, be deemed unhealthy, whereas artificial sweetened fruit snacks or reduced fat sugary yogurts will be considered healthy? In reality, the Food and Drug Administration's proposed rule will need to undergo significant review and revision to be sure it does not place the politics of food above science and facts, says Sean McBride, the founder of DSM Strategic Communications and a former executive at the Grocery Manufacturers Association. The details are critical because the final rule goes well beyond the simple definition by creating a de facto nutrition profile regulatory scheme that will dictate how food can be made for decades to come. Peter Lurie, the executive director of the Center for Science in the Public Interest, said front of packaging labeling shows real promise, but it must be mandatory, simple, nutrition specific, and include calories. He said such labeling does change consumer purchasing behavior and forces companies to reformulate their products to attain more favorable ratings. He said unless a healthy definition and label is very specific, some companies will try to game the system by health-washing their less healthy products to appear healthy. The FDA started a public process to upgrade healthy nutrient content claims for food labeling in 2016. But critics have said the dietary guidelines have often failed to focus on the right things. During the Trump administration, for instance, the 2020 Dietary Guidelines Committee was forbidden to consider the health effects of consuming red meat, ultra-processed foods, and sodium. Federal nutrition guidance has experienced some significant pendulum swings. For years, recommendations were based on intuitive but incorrect thinking. Eating fat makes us fat. Consuming large quantities of cholesterol gives us high cholesterol. First defined by the FDA in 1994, healthy was initially focused on fat content. In 2016, the Food and Drug Administration reversed its position on the term healthy, announcing that the agency would reconsider the definition of the word. The new FDA guidance recently announced would automatically allow whole fruits and vegetables to bear the claim of healthy, and prepared food products would have to meet criteria for nutrient requirements and percentage limits for added sugars, sodium, and saturated fats. Recent dietary guidelines put an emphasis on eating a plant-based diet, including vegetables, fruits, whole grains, legumes, nuts, and seeds. They maintain a hard line about limiting your intake of salt and saturated fat. But they state simply that cholesterol is not a matter of concern, doing away with the long-standing 300 milligrams per day limit. Sometimes it seems the more we try to understand these important decisions that are being made, the more confused we become. Let's make it simple. Eat plenty of fresh fruits and vegetables. Is it true you're only as old as you feel? Studies are finding a link between a person's actual age and their psychological age in their future health and longevity. Psychological age may differ from actual age, and some health experts say there might be a way to improve physical health by making yourself feel younger, or at least taking a positive attitude toward aging. Feeling older than your actual age is associated with a higher likelihood of dementia, frailty, stroke, and heart disease, according to recent research by scientists and academics studying links between psychology and health. Some research focuses on the correlation between attitudes and mortality, have linked positive feelings about aging and feeling younger than you actually are with a longer life. In one German study of 2,400 adults over more than 20 years, participants who said they expected to continue to grow and develop in old age lived an average of 13 years longer than those who didn't expect such growth. Being in good health is a good reason why many people feel younger than they are and therefore might live longer, according to scientists who study the psychology of aging. Many of those researchers believe the effect can go the other way too, noting that those with a younger and more optimistic sense of aging might be more apt to take care of themselves. People who feel older might generate more stress, whether they're 30 or fretting about early signs of wrinkles, or 65 and concerned that their coworkers think they're slowing down. Scientists searching for biological reasons for the link between suggested age and long-term health have found in a recent studies of men over 50, those who felt older than their actual age had an elevated levels of a stress hormone. Our experiences can influence our feelings about aging. Becca Levy, a professor of epidemiology and psychology at the Yale School of Public Health, has conducted studies that found older people function differently after being exposed to either positive or negative words regards aging. Age beliefs are quite malleable. They're not set in stone. As many of you know, I'm not a spring chicken, and let me share with you some of my experiences regarding aging. I don't know why I'm still here, but there must be a reason. I'm fortunate that I have fairly good health with many restrictions. I believe that the best thing we do for us is our attitude. What do we do with what we have depends on our attitude. My dad had a saying, you play the cards you're dealt. In other words, you have to deal with circumstances as they happen to you. So many of us are no longer able to go when we want to go, and when we want to go, have to make adjustments. We still have many options. We read, we do jigsaw or crossword puzzles. We've run out of time for this episode of Thought for Food. Be sure to tune in next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Bob Kruger, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. If you have any questions or comments, please call us at 919-832-5138. We'd like to hear from you. That number is 919-832-5138.